Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Hello and welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take Newsletter and a commodities broker here at StoneX. We work with hedgers, whether on the producer or the end user side, speculators too, do everything in futures and options, OTC and swap markets, structured products. And for our hedging clients, we also provide consultant services. If you have any questions for me, please feel free to reach out. My number is 312-706-7610. Email is craig.turner@stonex.com. If you're a client and you hear anything that you like or you need to change on here, please give me a call. You should also have my cell phone and you can text me too. If you like the podcast, please feel free to pass it along. It's how people find us and find me. And if you want to check out the newsletter, please go to turnerstake.com or turnerstakeag.com. And that's about it. So let's jump on into what happened this week. I was actually traveling. I was at a conference in St. John's, Newfoundland, there for aquaculture. It's an interesting industry, to say the least. You know, a lot of aquaculture is now becoming sustainable source of protein. And, you know, there's a lot goes into the feed, but a big part of it can be not just fish meal, but soybean meal and maybe even canola meal. So it's very interesting to be there. And I enjoyed it. So that's where I was earlier in the week. I'll tell you what, it is hard to get to Newfoundland, especially from Chicago. It's no easy flight to get there. And for everyone who anyone doesn't know this, their time zone is, I want to say, 3.5 hours ahead of Chicago. So, you know, you've got the central time zone, you've got the eastern time zone, then you have, and going towards Europe, you have Atlantic, and they're all hours past each other. But then the Newfoundland is a half hour. So it's 2.5 hours, I guess, from Chicago. But tough to figure out when the open is when you have a time zone that's on the half hour instead of the hour. But anyways, it was a lot of fun. Great time. Nice people. Very interesting conference. All right. So the macro markets, UK came out this week and increased inflation was up to 10.1%. So that's high. I mean, that is 40-year high for them. Now, when it comes to the United Kingdom, they have more inflation towards energy costs just because the price of gas is just so high there. And that has everything to do with Russia and the Ukraine war. But their food prices are also up. So when you combine food and energy inflation, I think that's a big part of the inflation there. And we're just keep on seeing these high inflationary numbers. Now, some of it is part of just leftover what happens in COVID when you have all these shutdowns and supply chain issues. We are seeing logistical costs and freight coming down. I think what you're going to see here is, you know, just because of the inflation, a lot of these COVID restrictions will just keep on coming down and things will hopefully keep on flowing in terms of a supply chain. When you take a look at, you know, the food inflation that we've seen, you know, a lot of it can be, you know, attributed to supply chain. It could be also attributed to just, you know, anyone who's been following the ag markets knows that we've had issues here with, you know, Canada had a drought last year. South America during soybeans had a drought. You know, we have the problems in the Black Sea. Whether it be, you know, North America, South America, or Europe, all these places had significant issues, whether it be, you know, anything ranging from war, right, or to weather problems. And now that tends to, especially the weather problems in North America and South America, that's going to sort itself out over time. The Ukraine one is definitely something we need to keep an eye on. But that is, you know, and that's definitely part of the inflation. The other part of the inflation, I talked about it in my newsletter, just hinted at it today, you know, is on the energy side. And, you know, what's going on in energy, which we don't want to see pop into the food food policy, is with energy policy. What we're seeing here is the push for green energy and renewable energy, which, you know, is valid, is one thing. But, you know, what's happening here is we're not having development for traditional forms of energy, whether that be natural gas or petroleum products and refinery capacity. And, you know, you can't and it's leading to much higher prices. You know, we are in a recession, most likely in the United States, in China, definitely, you know, and if we're in a recession in the United States and a recession in China, you know, what are then the odds of a global recession happening? They're probably pretty good. Also, in, you know, the United States, we're starting to hear more about layoffs or possible layoffs. We're hearing a lot about the latest company reports coming out as quarterly stock earnings is just how high inventories are for places like Target, for example, and stores like that. Which means consumers aren't spending, and if inventories are that high, that means we're going to see a slowdown, a continued slowdown. And when inventories are that high, they have to mark down product to move it. People aren't buying as much, so there's going to be layoffs because of that. And then two, we're not going to see these retailers buy as much down the price to replace it all because product's moving slower. So not only are the companies that are retailers that have an issue, the wholesalers and manufacturing, it's like there's a natural lag in all this, will eventually have issues too, because the future business they're expecting from a place like Target isn't going to come because they have such high inventories right now and they're struggling to work it off. So it's not a good combo. And it's, you know, I wouldn't use the stock market as a barometer for the economy. And the thing with the stock market is the managers and the executive teams there, you know, their performance is based on how they do with earnings, regardless of how the economy is doing. So they'll find a way, like, for example, cut back on buying new purchases, find a price point for inventory they have and have layoffs and still turn a profit. Not the prettiest side of capitalism, but that's how it works. And that's why the stock market can outperform the economy, right? Because the stock market's run by, you know, the S&P 500 is 500 largest companies with, in theory, 500 of the best managerial staffs. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there, right? And that's their job, to basically cut costs and find a way, you know, to maximize profit centers. So anyways, that's coming. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's a last half of 2022, which is what we're in now, and the first half of 2023 story. I still think the recession is going to be, I don't want to say shallow, but I don't think it's going to be like the Great Recession, you know, because there's no financial crisis attached to this. This is, I think, going to be a run-of-the-mill slowdown, you know, which isn't great. I mean, everyone gets hurt in that. And the worst thing about it is the inflation to go along with the recession, which is going to make it feel worse than it needs to be, right? If you didn't have a whole lot of inflation going on right now, and inflation, you know, you get a light recession, that's one thing. You get a recession and everything costs more, that, you know, that kind of stinks there. So that's not going to be so great. But for anyone, especially on the inflation side, because everyone feels it. And, you know, but that is what it's looking like for the moment. I don't see any reason why the markets crash. You know, there's no reason for a crash. A crash is usually happens because some kinds of systemic failure or things get overheated, and then have a very big reaction to the downside because everyone's on the wrong side of the trade. That's not really good. I don't think that's going to happen this time. But I do think we kind of consolidate and have a hard time, you know, getting back up to the highs. That's for certain. We're not for certain, but that's how I see things in the stock market right now. In the United States, it's interesting. You know, the Fed here is going to probably raise interest rates again. The economic numbers aren't great, but they're not awful. So I would think they keep on doing a 50 basis point hike. I mean, inflation's still high, employment's okay. You know, company earnings might be lower and they might be laying off people. That's going to be the big one. If the layoffs really start to accelerate here in the second half of, or in the last quarter of 2022, I can see the Fed start slowing down or tempering these interest rate increases, because they do have two goals there. One is to keep unemployment low, and the second one is to keep inflation low. So we'll see how they juggle that if we do see bigger layoff numbers, over the next couple of months. So that's where we are. And I do want to get back real quick to the energy policy, though. Like, it's gonna, right now, energy prices are still relatively high. I mean, $85 to $90 for crude and gasoline, it's not cheap. It's not as nearly as bad as it was 2 months ago, but it's not a huge deal. And this is in the face of numbers that are pretty bearish on energy demand. Like, we should be hitting, lows, in energy here, or going towards it. And we're still, historically speaking, from the past 5 years at a relatively high price. And the thing is, in my mind, what happens in the end of the winter or into the spring? And let's say there is a recession and it takes 6 to 9 months to work through the economy. And remember, we started this recession, when the market, when we started seeing slow growth. So even though we just had two consecutive quarters of lower GDP growth, and now you can call it a recession, it actually started 6 months ago, right? So sometimes it takes 6, 12, 18 months to get out of a recession. But if it started probably 6 months ago, and we got another 6 months left, maybe we're coming out of this thing in the springtime, and you start getting better growth, in the spring into summer, and there's more energy demand, and now you also have a seasonal time for higher energy demand. What does that mean for prospects of energy prices in the future? Well, if there's a lot of production and you're getting a lot of surpluses and, storing it away for a rainy day, that's great. It will help offset any kind of demand when the economy turns around and when we're a traditional bullish part of the year. But that's not happening. Like, the prices are coming down just because, the demand is definitely softened, but the supplies aren't getting built back the way it should. So my concern on the energy right now is what happens when this economy comes back. So I've been looking at December crude. I've also been looking at the June 23, if we want to do a little bit more something longer term, nothing too heavy in it. But if I'm hedging energy costs in the future, I'm starting to look at June 23. That's eight months from now. And you can look at it from a spec trader, but definitely I'm looking at it from more of a, kind of a hedge here on what happens when we come out of this recession. And the thing is, too, I would remember, what is going on in terms of new energy production? What is going on in terms of exploration and investment and refinery investment? Nothing. I mean, not on the fossil fuel side. And it doesn't, it may be one day renewables and green energy, fill all the void of the demand from, fossil fuels, but that's not the case right now. So it doesn't look great. It doesn't look great. So, on that side of it, when it comes to other inflation, like the transportation costs and freight and food, I see those being solved faster than the energy does. I think the energy problem could be a problem with us for a while. So anyways, that's kind of my take where we are right now. So I think we kind of got to trade this accordingly going forward. So when I'm talking about energy prices, a lot of times I'm looking at ways, how can I get long in the long term? Because I do think we're going to be higher in the long term. When it comes to the grain markets, I actually think we're going to be lower in the long term. I don't think we're going to be, lows like 2 years ago lows, but I do think you do see more acres, and I think that you do see better production. We've had a lot of string of weather issues, and eventually get a string of really good weather. So, and for the most part, you know, there will be things that are more bullish than others. I think soybean oil is going to be more bullish than others just because of the renewable diesel. You know, wheat, eventually, I think the tight stocks eventually get solved. And I think the same thing with corn and soybeans. So let's jump into the grains here for a little bit, and then we'll wrap this up. Let's start. I'm going to start off with the wheat market. We are, you know, Russia, Canada, and the United States are going to be starting harvest, you know, just beginning and heading into it for spring wheat. Russia should have a very big crop. The northern plains, the United States should be okay, and Canada should be good. Though I'm hearing a little bit of variable results this week as farmers are starting to get into the field and a little bit more of the drier areas. So we'll see. But regardless, there's, you know, I don't know, if we don't have a record crop, it'll still be a good crop. And all that grain is going to hit the market. Also, a lot of the cash prices for Russia and Ukraine have been coming down significantly, basically to not just be cheaper than the rest of the world, but significantly cheaper than the rest of the world. So people will take a chance on that Black Sea corridor. And if it's cheap enough, you know, they're expecting more demand in the short term. And as people get confident and comfortable with shipping through the Black Sea, then prices can come higher and more people will trust the process. You got to remember, it's in Russia's best interest to have the Black Sea open. They are going to have a ton of grain and oil seeds that they will not be able to move out if they don't get the Black Sea open too. And they're just going to have to grin and bear it and let Ukraine also participate in the trade. They can't have it go either way. The energy is different. You know, if Russia is not supplying, you know, the East, which in this case would be Europe, energy, they can turn right around and go west and go to Asia, China, India, you know, easily. I mean, there you go. Two biggest populations in the world, and they can sell their energy over there instead of Europe. So that's not as big of a deal. But you know, when you're talking 94 million metric tons of wheat coming out of Russia, I mean, the Black Sea's got to be open. There's no way around it. So you know, they can go ahead and bomb around ports and you know and fight with everyone. But you know what Russia's not doing is bombing the ships, and they're not bombing the actual facilities at the ports. They might get close, but they haven't been actually doing it. And they need this to work. That's my personal opinion is they need this to work too. Just, you know, just as much as Ukraine. So I think more and more grain comes out. Now, if it's, you know, Ukraine used to ship 5 to 6 million metric tons out of the Black Sea of grain and oil seeds. You know, the estimations maybe for this month are gonna be about 3 million metric tons. In September and October, can they get to 4, maybe even 5? And that, I think the 5 is kind of pie in the sky, just by the way you're seeing the trends happen and, you know, some of the reports and some of the people who are actually, you know, in that area that are the exports. But 4 million metric tons coming out of Ukraine, plus Russia being able to export too, means that the humanitarian crisis of all this kind of gets taken off the table. Now, does that mean prices go back to where they are 2 years ago? No, prices still remain elevated. But, you know, does that mean wheat is $6, $7, and $8 instead of $7, $8, $9 or $8, $9, $10, you know, depending on which classes you're looking at? I think it does. And I think, you know, corn will be able to get out and sunflower will be able to get out. And when you take a look at the grain markets, whether it be wheat, you know, wheat probably has $1 to $2 of Black Sea export uncertainty premium. Like, I don't know a better way to put that, but you know, it's not the weather anymore. I don't think the wheat market's trading the weather. I think the wheat market is now trading how much can actually get out of the Black Sea, and what do we have to price ration around the rest of the world for, you know, which comes in the form of higher wheat prices. Until Russia and Ukraine can prove to the world that they really can supply this wheat. Because when you get to September and October and into November, the world basically turns its eye and its demand for grain and oil seed to the Black Sea region. Like, that is their time. They usually, when the harvest is coming, because the prices are cheaper in the Black Sea than the United States and Europe, the demand goes to the Black Sea first. And those guys sell out or a majority of their stuff first. And then it tends to come over to Europe and Canada, the United States and Canada. It's not saying the United States, Canada, and Europe don't have business. They have traditional clients, you know, and customers that are close to them. But, you know, if it's, you know, if it's equidistant, or, you know, you're far away from those places, you're going to Ukraine and you're going to Russia first. You know, Mexico is going to buy corn from the United States, not going to buy it from Europe. You know, if they need to buy wheat, they'll buy it from the United States. They won't buy it from Black Sea because of the proximity of the trade. But, you know, there are definitely countries out there that if the freight cost is the same, they're definitely going to the Black Sea first. So that we'll see how that goes. And it's coming. It's coming in the next few weeks. We will see what kind of ships can get in and out of the Black Sea. So that's wheat. And I think that we could be another dollar lower in wheat if things go well in the Black Sea here, maybe even more than that. I will say the one thing about wheat is you do make a majority of it, produce a majority of it in the Northern Hemisphere. New crop wheat for Ukraine will be lower, and that's going to be a factor for sure. So we'll have to see how that goes. That's not a great prospect for supplies around the world, but so that is kind of a wild card too. But you know, we can't see wheat go back down to $4 or $5. It's going to have to stay elevated. I just don't know if it needs to be $8. On a related note, that corn, it's kind of the same deal. You know, Ukraine is a big producer of corn. The United States, you know, if we have 175 or 176 yield, you know, that'll be good. The Argentina crop is getting bigger from last year in some of the latest estimates. So if we're at a 1.4 or 1.5 billion carryout in corn, let's say that's how we kind of end up. You know, 1.5 billion carryout 2 years ago would have suggested at harvest corn's around high threes, low fours. And here we are at $6 and we're $2 higher. Has the corn market seen 50% of natural inflation, structural inflation, or is there something else going on? I think there is something else going on. Now, if you told me corn has, you know, over the past couple of years because of input prices and all the other inflation that's going on, that inflation is going to be eventually somewhere between 10 and 20%, and it's on the higher side of 20, and your old lows of 330 harvest lows are going to now be instead of 330 harvest lows when you got a 2 billion crop, it's 380 or high threes or low fours. I could buy that, but I can't buy $6. And, you know, not that we're at a 2 billion carryout, we're at 1.5 billion, 1.5 carryout, 1.4 carryout, most likely. But, you know, do we need to be 620 in August? And I don't think we are. And I don't think, even with the inflation, I don't think a 1.3 or 1.4, 1.5 carryout justifies that. So what's going on with corn? I think what's going on with corn is, you know, wheat, you know, corn tends to trade, you know, wheat tends to trade a 50% markup to corn. So if corn's $4, wheat's six. You know, if wheat, you know, if corn is six, then wheat should be hanging around nine. Just a traditional kind of price differential. That's not perfect, but it's just kind of the way to go about it. So I think part of the high price of corn is wheat, and the high price of corn is what's going on in the Black Sea, and the world's kind of waiting. Can corn get out of Ukraine? Can corn get out of the Black Sea? And if it does, then I ask myself, is there a 50 cents to a dollar premium in corn right now that's really just dependent upon can grain get out of the Black Sea in September and October? And if it does, do we go down 50 to a dollar because of it? I'm leaning that way. That's where I'm leaning right now with this. Like, if the grain starts flowing out of the Black Sea and these ships going out there, I do think there's 50 cents to a dollar of that kind of, I guess, Black Sea export premium. I know we talk about weather premium comes out of the market. You know, the uncertainty of the Black Sea export premium is going to come out of the market then. And I think that is distinctly a corn and a wheat issue. Finally, and we're talk about the oil seeds here. So we're going to talk about canola and we're going to talk about soybeans. You know, on the soybean front, I think what we see here is, you know, we have the finishing weather. Weather's still more important to soybeans, you know, than corn, and certainly definitely winter wheat, but certainly spring wheat. And we're probably going to see a trend line yield in soybeans. or very close to it. If there's any kind of bearish, you know, bias, it might even be a little bit higher yield based on recent surveys. We do have the Pro Farmer Crop Tour next week. That's going to be interesting to hear how things are looking. And, you know, South America is going to probably plant record acres. And if they have a trend line yield, I think the soybean balance sheets start to get a lot looser. Now, I don't think we're going to $8 in soybeans, but could we go back to 12? Can you make the argument there's a dollar of Black Sea premium also that, you know, where soybeans are kind of held high just because corn and wheat are in the Black Sea issues? And then if we make a crop here and get some harvest pressure, could we be 12 in somewhere in between 11 and 12? If the crop ends up being pretty good, South America, you know, South America is going to be a little dry. We'll get that in a second. And the Black Sea exports flow. I can make the case for $12 soybeans and new crop here. And with South America, just like Europe, I mean, you need, it's dry and the crops might just get by, but you need moisture to come back in for planting. And South America may be facing La Nina again this year. Weather has not been great for global agriculture over the past couple of years. And we could have a La Nina situation in South America. That's something we'll have to keep an eye on. You know, and in Europe, they could use some rain for winter wheat seedings and also for winter rapeseed seedings, right? So the weather is still important, just, you know, not as critical at the moment. And then as far as canola goes, you know, it's been on the board here, 800 to 850 Canadian, you know, per ton. And when I take a look at the canola balance sheets, if, you know, the weather is getting warmer in September, which is good because frost certainly can hurt canola. You can, because of the late planted crop, frost risk was definitely going to be an issue this year with the forecast warming up in Canada and pushing off that frost risk from, you know, early to mid September to probably now late September. That's going to be good for development. And we'll just kind of remains to be seen. Some of the early canola yields that I've been hearing haven't been great. It's almost one of these things where it looks better from the road than it is. I don't know if that's just very anecdotal, you know, where I'm just getting a couple of stories here and there. So, but, you know, the first couple of conversations I've had this week, I've only had a couple, you know, about it, wasn't great. So we'll see how that canola, we'll see how that goes with the canola harvest. But now my kind of interest has peaked there because I was really thinking up until about a week ago, this was going to be a bumper crop, but I don't know. But the thing is, if it is like an average yield or better than what Stats Canada is saying, then canola goes from, you know, the low eights to maybe seven, could even be high sixes, you know, on the board there. And oil seeds get solved faster than the grain and the corn and wheat balance sheets, just because oil seeds don't have as much of an issue going on the Black Sea as wheat does and then corn. So going forward, if I'm a farmer, I'm looking at probably pricing, if you know, getting some hedges on for maybe July 23 and Nov 23, whether that be futures. I prefer the options market because you want to give yourself some upside. I also like some of the swap OTC products for that too. If I'm on the wheat side, you know, wheat and corn is a little trickier because you're kind of waiting to see what happens with Black Sea, but I think it gets done. And I think you do need to start looking out for, you know, July next year for hedging some wheat and December next year for hedging some corn. If you plan on storing grain, you know, I'd be looking at selling some of the summer contracts or buying puts in the summer contracts just to protect yourself. When I do this, when you have high prices and we, you know, start buying puts. And I like buying puts and selling call spreads, self-finance. When I start doing that, I know there's seasonal times of the year where we could rally. And I know some people are kind of, you know, don't, you know, are well aware of that too and sometimes shy away from hedges because of that possibility. What I like to do is you put the position on in the summer for next year. And then when we hit seasonal times of the year, we can add a little futures and be kind of delta neutral, or maybe be a little bit long through the futures market, but have our long-term option positions in, you know, for really for next year. And then during the seasonal window, maybe we'll be a little bit long futures and, you know, take it off as the market goes up. So right now, there's no reason to be bullish in the grain markets until probably mid to late September, mid-September at best. So, you know, maybe get all along, you know, and then take a look at, see what happens. You know, do you just get a regular post-harvest rally? Is it dry in South America? And kind of manage it that way. So that's how I like to do it. If I am on now are on the consumer side, I think you're going to get some opportunities here to extend your coverage as we get into the end of August and through mid-September. You tend to, the earliest the grain markets will tend to bottom out unless there's an ongoing drought is the end of August. That's when first notice day is, and you get pressure right up until there. If the crop is shorter, there is a drought, you know, you'll start to pop up first. If not, then we'll just, you know, that harvest lower, the chop lower will go into mid to late September. So I would be using that period to basically price out the rest of 2022. Then we need to see how the Black Sea and South American planting goes. It's going to happen at the same time. Like, you'll see the Black Sea exports, plus you'll see South America and how the conditions are shaping up and how planting's going. And that'll give us a kind of a good idea of what to expect for the rest of the quarter, you know, the fourth quarter 2012, and kind of the range of possibilities for the first quarter. And we can go from there. So that's if I'm on the buy side. And if I'm on the spec side, you know, the play here is to be short for the next 2 to 4 weeks and then look to turn around and get long in the grain markets after the seasonal lows hit. And, you know, those are the things we'll do. And so they all mesh, whether it's the buy side, the sell side, or the spec side. It's really just how you play it and position yourself based on, you know, what your risk is or your business, you know, your business dictates. So if you have any questions for me, please give me a call. My number here is 312-706-7610. My email is craig.turner@stonex.com. Feel free to reach out anytime. Have a great week, everyone. If I met you in St. John's, you know, welcome aboard, and, you know, thanks for listening too, and have a good week, everyone, and I'll talk to you later.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels Trading Broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.